Pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang, starting on my second drink. With me, as always, is Nathan.
Late,
maybe
as
starting
always,
as,
I was
maybe starting on his first drink.
I was going to say, late, it seems to be a Sunday tradition.
Yes, late Sunday in your ongoing effort to get me schlitzed so that I'm hungover on Monday for work. Just to give you guys a bit of information
passive
on this.
Passive-aggressive is the best kind
of
aggressive,
God.
Am I right?
Just to give you guys a little background information on the situation, Nathan sends me a text at about just about 7 o'clock. He's like, hey, ready to go anytime. Just let me know. And I was like, all right, cool. So then about an hour ago, I sent him a text saying, all right, ready to go, 10 minutes, nothing for like an hour. And I'm like, you know, Nathan, you're the only person I know who will be like, all right, dude, I'm ready to go anytime. Okay, let me just turn my phone on mute and put that in another room. I exhausted almost every avenue. Gmail got your attention because I thought maybe his computer's on in the background and Gmail's there and he might hear a tunk from his computer.
No, want to know what it honestly was? Finished our 16 race special cup on Mario Kart. Because like I said, we're busting out all the old GameCube games for Laura because it's a lot easier than the pointiness of the Wii. Because, you know, she's three. But like I said, we're playing Double Dash, which is the perfect game for a small child because you just make them the backseat person and just be like, just throw turtle shells. Just keep throwing them. And we had just finished, our 16 race fucking Super Cup. And I looked at the clock. I'm like, 8:30. I'm like, man, that's fucking weird that Lang hasn't texted me. And I walk over to my phone, which is charging across the room, apparently on silent. And I see two missed calls from you, my little voicemail notification, which I didn't check, a Gmail from you, three text messages. And I was just like, oh, well, fuck.
So that's the start out here. I'm just going to have another drink real quick before we start here. Let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I played some more Firestorm and had some more people play at 1250 to kind of get a measure of how much we were going to be able to get done in that 2.5 hour time limit for Firestorm Armada. So that's kind of been dominating my hobby side. And I lost to Jason.
That's like two or three times in the last year. Like
He's beaten me twice at Firestorm Armada, and that's frustrating. But what's more frustrating? What's more frustrating is I lost by a margin of 27 victory points.
Oh.
He got the 10% marginal victory by the end of the 2.5 hours. We played a full three turns, and Jason is a slow player. He hasn't played in a really long time. So again, this was a good measuring stick to see, like, is this going to work at 1250? How much longer is it going to end up taking? And at the end, in the last two activations of the last, like, 10 minutes we were playing, two things happened. His Dreadnought had one hull point left on it, and he scored a double one critical on my battleship and supernova'd it in the last turn. And that's why he went. I was just like, son of a bitch, if I had got one more fucking point.
So in other words, it's like our last game where you were pantsing the shit out of me. And then, I double sixed your battleship in one shot and I think took out your heavy cruisers in the same turn. You're like, well done.
And that was exactly it, right? So, I mean, it was a good game and we played it out. And then Matt played the winner. Matt played his Reloza against Jason's Dindrenzi and thoroughly won. He got a major victory. He didn't get the star order, but by the end of three turns, by the end of 2.5 hours, he had a very, very strong lead in terms of victory points. And I think that was like the second game he's won with his Reloza. And yes, he did learn that cloaking is good. And he's like, cloaking's great.
Good for him. I mean, it took him 3 years, it's good that he is finally learning what everyone else knew, reading the rules. So, you know what? Good for you, Mac. Good on you.
Yes, very much so. So, I mean, it is looking like 1250 is going to be what I'm going to do for that for the next Firestorm tournament. But I may make the games 3 hours instead of 2 hours and 30 minutes just for the – because, I mean, you know, getting up a half hour earlier, staying a half hour later is not the worst thing in the world. But again, they're relative. I don't want the games to run too long where somebody's getting pantsed in an hour and they're sitting around for 2 hours. I'd rather it be a relatively tight game where you got to be playing quick and you got to be making moves. But yeah, other than that, what have you been doing this week?
I submitted my list for Out of the Basement Open, which is on Saturday.
Yes.
And I built the one model I need to. And I went to an art supply store, which is a guilty pleasure of mine, is always going looking at all the shiny stuff that I can
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
apply to miniature painting. And I found a brand of water-based colored primer that I'm giving a war. I'm trying out right now upstairs, on the one model that I have to paint because I wanted to. I just thought, yeah, like they have a fucking amazing range. It's a Liquitex brand. At this point, I tried priming him bare, so I didn't do a normal GW like white primer over top and then do it. One thing I did notice is because it's not like solvent based, which you can tell immediately when you spray it because it doesn't smell as cancery as the G-Dub stuff. It doesn't kind of adhere as well. It kind of beads a little bit. It dries fine, so you don't have to worry about like cracking or beading. But I found it dried a bit streaky, so I put on a second coat and we're gonna see. So by next week, I will be able to tell you whether or not I like the product or not. Thus far, it is looking like a winner.
Plastic, resin, or pewter? Were you priming?
Plastic.
Plastic, okay.
So I'm priming plastic right now, and like I said, it looks like it's going to be a winner, which is going to save because I mean, at least for my demons, like the demon I'm painting is going to be red. So I, like I said, I went with a red. They've got nice selection because I think they had like 30 or 40 different colors and hues, and they had like four different reds. So like I said, it's nice so far. After that, I gotta paint him, and then I'm gonna fuck around and try some liquid medium on a new basing scheme. So,
Yeah. Well, I mean, say what you will about Games Workshop's paints. With the exception of Commando Khaki, their paints are always very good. The pigments are always very good. Their primers typically work very well. I mean, we waved goodbye to Purity Seal and like their varnish and all that kind of stuff a long time ago. I mean, there's just no point anymore. The shit that they have on the shelves is garbage. But really, it's like when it comes down to their paints, they have a very, very good quality of product there. As often as they change it, it's a good quality of product. And so you get a little spoiled going from those types of things, and then you want to go try something else and see how this works, and it just does not work out. And so you kind of have to be okay with 80% good. And if that's about what you get, you're usually pretty okay with that, and that's actually not a terrible thing if it saves you a few hours of base coating.
And like I said, it just for me what it looks like is after I put that second coat on, and the second coat was very thin compared to the first coat. It looks like it's gonna be fine. It looks like it's gonna be perfect. Again, I think that if everything does go well and I'm able to paint it up really nicely, seal it, and it doesn't rub off. Because I think that's the only other thing that I'm a little bit concerned about is if the foundation isn't as strong, the fact that we handle it, because this particular design portrait paint, portrait work.
Say that again, you went roboto.
Oh, Mr. Roboto. I was going to say this particular brand of primer is designed for sort of portrait painting, like painting on canvas and things like that. So, you
Okay.
prime your canvas and then you go with it. So, what I'm going to be curious about is seeing how it holds up and is it going to rub off from gaming? Because, again, by the looks of it, the second coat is perfect and it's going to dry perfect and it's going to be completely usable and I'm going to jump into painting it. Just after the two coats, which is fine because I mean, realistically, how much effort is it to
Well, I mean, if you're
wait the
already,
hour for your primer to
right.
dry,
If
throw
you're
another?
already looking, yeah, I mean, if you're already looking to do a second coat just for a nice even finish, I mean, you might even think of just doing a light dusting of GW primer before you hit it with this stuff. Not like a full coat, not like a
Oh, yeah,
full heavy coat, but
absolutely.
just a light dusting to give it a little bit of a nicer surface to work with. If it's meant for portrait painting, it's meant for canvas.
Yeah,
So I
it's.
mean, it's gonna need a relatively porous, relatively rough surface to stick to.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm trying the cheap out version. I'm also planning on eventually painting some more with it. In which case, I was going to do exactly what you were saying and just do a light dusting of a white primer, so that way it's still mostly gray, mostly that, you know, neutral color. So I'm not having to fight through a black undertone or get all kind of pinkish with the white base. And you know, we'll see. We'll do some tests with it. Like I said, I think if anything, the problem might be it rubbing off through gaming, even if I seal it. So hopefully not. I will know by the end of the Out of the Basement tournament, because I said it's
you know, it's, I used to play a pinkish white base.
A pinkish white base, huh?
Yeah, well, for a band. I don't remember which one.
Didn't you play bass for them, though?
No, I played a pinkish white bass, but it was for a different band. I don't remember the name.
Oh, okay.
You missed that joke. That one was just for me.
See, to be fair, you cut out half of it, so I was eating with a question mark.
No, I said I used to play a pinkish white bass.
Oh, gotcha.
That's what it was. I was... Oh, internet, you're bound to just fuck this show today, aren't you? All right, so moving on with our ongoing coverage of the new Dark Angels Codex release, we're going to have our model of the week, which is now going to be the worst model in this release. We talked about the best model in this release last week, which was the Ravenwing Champion with the Blade of Caliban. We really did quite like that model. The whole box as a whole was a very nicely done box to go with the traditional Space Marine bike. But the worst model of the week is one page over, unsurprisingly, and it is the Dark Shroud. Because floating monasteries that make darkness, because, you know, we're called the Dark Angels, so we have to have some sort of darkness, even though there's no fucking reference to anything even remotely similar to this, or it has no purpose on the battle. Like, it makes no sense with what it's fucking stupid. There's not one redeeming quality about this whole fucking model. I hate it.
No. Well, okay. I mean, here is the thing with this. Not only is the Dark Shroud fucking terrible, but even the Vengeance is not great. Because, I mean, we kind of made fun of it where, you know, it's just like we added a cupola for no reason and we armored where you used to sit and no one sits there because...
Well, they didn't armor it. They stained glassed it.
Well, I mean, that's like armor, right? but what gets it for me with the Dark Shroud is... First of all, conceptually, it is a stupid idea. Like, absolutely fucking terrible idea for a unit. And I remember reading it, because, I mean, like, you know, the way GW presents codexes, right, is they, you know, it's always your rules, and then your points costs at the back. So I remember reading it, and I was looking at the profile, and I read the rules, and I was, you know, and I thought to myself, I'm like, if it's 40 points, sure, it'll be great as a points filler.
Right.
You know, you're just going to take it as sort of, you know, exactly that, points filler. Like, holy shit, I got 50 points. I don't know what to do. Well, I'll take a Dark Shroud.
And then if it was 10 or a 5-point upgrade on top of a normal land speeder.
Yeah, and then I was like, 80 points? Go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. So you have a terrible model. You've got the stained glass. You got the cupola with the assault cannon. You've got the monastery in the back, this stupid little monastery. But what gets me, I think, the pièce de résistance is that there is a gunner for the monastery. Now, reading the rules, the only weapon that this comes armed with is an assault cannon. So why is there this dude in the back swiveling the monastery around? Because that's literally all he can do.
He's redirecting the 6-inch bubble.
You know, like, I'm just like, I just don't fucking understand. Like, is this like the fucking Marine that eats paste? You know, you don't believe in killing your own brethren. You know, he took a head wound and he's just dumb now. So we let him swivel the monastery. Like, what the fuck?
Here's how you know his job sucks and he's bored to shit. Look at the head down shot in the codex, where you get to see straight down on like all his controls and shit like that.
Oh my God.
And he's got the dual skulls, like, handlebar fucking, you know, like, he's already blinged out his cockpit because there's just nothing better to do than stand there and look
he's
at monitors.
He's actually playing Angry Birds,
right?
Star Wars Angry Birds. It's really confusing in that universe.
Well, I like how he needs all of the extra like eyeball pieces and shit like that on his helmet because, you know, he needs to look down.
Yeah, you know, and like I said, it's just like, he's not a gunner, he doesn't have a weapon. Like, it's just like, he took a hedge wound. They do not trust him with weapons any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all he does is sit in the back pivoting the fucking monastery, going, whee!
Like, it's just... Let's list the number of things that would have been better than using him. A servitor.
Yep.
The machine spirit.
A servitor would have made sense, armoring over that idiotic thing. And the other thing is, when you look at the top-down display, this dude has a shitload of controls.
Yeah.
He's got a radar. He's got the whatever it is on the right. He's got a bunch of buttons on the left. Like, what the fuck?
Well, he's like a science officer on the bridge of the Starship, on the bridge of like an Enterprise or something like that, where he just kind of sits back there looking at his little console in the back. He doesn't really do anything all that often. He just looks at the scanner all the time for like the odd anomaly to pop up, so he can turn around and be like, "Worf."
Actually, no, he's not even the transporter chief, because there isn't a 2% of the time where you really need him.
That's right. Yeah, there was a conversation Nathan and I had last week about how awesome Chief O'Brien was, and how like being a transporter chief was like the most boring job in the world, because all you do is sit alone in a room 98% of your day, and in that 2% of your day, everyone is banking on you for their lives, and like it's the most exciting job ever, but the whole rest of the time you're just chilling. Anyways, segue. Yeah. All right, so let's get on to the book here. We talked about the choices, we talked about the changes last week. Obviously, since then, if you're paying attention, there has been an FAQ released by Games Workshop.
And for the record, I'd like to say that they listen to our podcast, yeah, because we're the one where we're just like, hey, make sure you play it as rapid fire so you can be that guy. And Games Workshop is just like, we're totally that guy.
Done and done. We don't sell enough bikes. and that's really what it comes down to. But
well, they're $20 each, according to the bike. Like, the kit that has that unit is a $60 kit, and it gives you 3 bikes.
People are going to convert their own, but it's still going to sell bikes. You know, yes, people who are using this codex for every other chapter in Warhammer 40,000 right now, because why the fuck wouldn't you use this codex for every other chapter in Warhammer 40,000?
I have Ravenwing, Black Knight, Salamanders. Yeah. Shut up.
Pretty much, right? Like, if you can take bikes, you're taking Black Knights, and you're taking them as elite choices, and you're going to throw them into your, like, it's or a fast attack. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so fucking ridiculous. Like, why would you not take everything in this book all the time, unless you were really, really specifically wanting to play the Vanilla Marines?
What's funny about it is I remember sending you an email on Tuesday, you know, because I'd been math hammering out the numbers, and I was just like, you know what, a fucking 10-man squad, I was like, they can't be rapid fire, because I'm like, a 10-man squad has so much plasma hurt, and you combine the 3 fucking free grenade launchers, which you don't even need to take, but like I said, I think they're useful for playing up into the combat abilities that the unit has, because they all have strength 5 and rending.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Ravenwing grenade launchers allow you to, with confidence, debuff a unit enough that after your plasma onslaught of 7 shots, is what I was literally saying to you, you would easily be able to fucking finish them off. No problem. And that was my reasoning for why there was no way that they were supposed to be rapid fire weapons, because 7 plasma shots was still enough to like fucking drop a Carnifex, take 5 wounds off of a Turvan or a Trigon, whom you would then make toughness for, charge in and fuck up, right? Mm-hmm. Yet lo and behold, they're just like, no, 7 shots, you actually get 14. And you're like, so in other words, the Trigon's dead, I don't need to charge. You know, like at that point, it's just like, it's so much fucking overkill. Because with Hammer of Wrath, with rapid fire 18-inch range plasma guns, with all of these things, you're just like, fuck me. Like that unit at 42 points per model is one of the best units in all of 40K. Hands
well, bar none, as far as I'm concerned, it's the best unit in 40K. I mean, you're never going to see a unit with that kind of firepower, with that kind of versatility, with that kind of mobility, with toughness 5, with all these other things. And then again, the shit that you can do to buff that unit is ridiculous. I mean, just ridiculous.
Well, remember the way wound allocation works. What I was thinking is, I'm like, you take a 6-man squad, and then you grab any character that has access to a 2+ save, and you put them on a fucking bike, and you put them in the front.
Right.
So now if someone looks at that unit, they're like, holy shit, fuck. I have to deal with Black Knights. Yeah. And I think, you know, because they literally are the unit you cannot ignore. Because, I mean, the fact that a unit of 6 could still take 2 grenade launchers and have 8 plasma shots.
Yeah.
For about, what, 250 points? Like, fuck me. It's huge. So it's just like, they're a unit you have to deal with. You throw this character in now and they're just like, all right, all my small arms fire is ignored. Toughness 5, 2+ save. Holy shit.
Are you hearing a microphone click in the background? Tick, tick, tick.
I am not.
Okay, that might just be my headphones then. In which case, fuck it. Yes, you're absolutely right. And I mean, I took advantage of that in the list that I built for today's episode. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, the highlights for the FAQ, obviously, you guys should go download it and read it yourself from the Games Workshop website. But Belial got himself an Iron Halo because, you know, he needed an Iron Halo. And they did specify that the not Dark Shroud does not have stealth on top of the shroud that it gives itself. It just has the shroud it gives itself. They also did clarify, of course, as we talked about here, that the I already feared the plasma the thingin,
Plasma Talon.
the plasma talon, the plasma talon. Is in fact rapid fire, as it says in the back of the book in the reference sheet. So don't throw your reference sheets away just yet. It is actually correct back there in the reference sheet. So yeah, I mean, it was good on Games Workshop for releasing it the day after. Good on them for actually being aware of, you know, things the internet can do in terms of making sure that people are playing the list properly from the get-go. There was a bit of a conversation regarding FLAC on the Jaded Gamercast Facebook page there a little bit, but I
Yeah,
think it
just a
was
whole bunch
cleared
of
up.
wish listing
It
and
was a
more.
lot of wish listing. I mean, people still hoping that everything gets FLAC, whether it says it or not, but I think it's very clear at this point that if it does not say it in the unit entry, it does not have FLAC.
Well,
And that's it.
even beyond that, anything with access to FLAC in both the Chaos Space Marines and the Dark Angels book specifically has it listed as a separate upgrade.
Well,
It's
exactly.
not given out to anything. And I think that's interesting because, again, I mean, Games Workshop has been cramming missile launchers down our throats since, the third edition box set. Probably earlier, I just didn't play second edition.
Right.
Because just like if you look at every fucking Marine set, I think up until Dark Vengeance was the only time that they skewed away from that. They gave you a missile launcher. Third edition, 10 Marines with a missile launcher. Fourth edition, 10 Marines with a missile launcher. Fifth edition, 10 Marines with a missile launcher. This one being Dark Angels, they gave him a plasma cannon, which, sure, why
Why not?
not? But like I said, it's literally been the only time that they've skewed away from the missile launcher. And I think what was interesting about that is people kind of stopped taking missile launchers in general. People were taking las cannons, people were taking multi-meltas because Vulcan twin linked them and they were free, shit like that. So, it's interesting to see them making FLAC an additional upgrade because it's also driving the cost up. Like when you look at it in this Dark Angels book, if I want a rocket launcher with FLAC, I'm paying 25 points
That's
for
right.
it. And that is a las cannon, or that's more than a plasma cannon, like things like that, where you're just like, shit, like that's a ton of points.
And again, we're not seeing the option on Cyclone missile launchers, right? Which is something that we had kind of talked about before, with
Or the
regards to Terminators,
typhoons on the
Typhoons as
Land
well,
Spot Eaters,
Dreadnoughts. But, you know, we kind of touched on this a little bit in the last episode by saying, like, this is a vision of what's to come for Space Marines when that vanilla book comes out and every other Marine Codex going forward, is the fact that you're only going to see FLAC missiles as available options in your tac squads and your dev teams. Like, that's pretty much all you're ever going to see. You're not going to see it anywhere else. It's like, listen, if you want the versatility, you're going to pay 25 points for it, you know, but by all means, go do that. But really, I mean, and again, that did factor into my list as well. Other than that, there's not much to say. I mean, not a lot has changed. Not a lot has been shifted around from my perspective of the book since we did our review last episode. Putting lists together back and forth, you and I have been kind of talking about, you know, what's a must, what's things to avoid, things of that nature. I'll go ahead and start out and kind of break my list down a little bit here for you, Nathan, and then you can
All
tell me
right.
what you think there, and I'll tell you kind of what the strategy around it is. And again, it's Marines, so we're not talking about anything dramatic here. But yes, okay, so I start off with Azrael, because why wouldn't you take Azrael for 215 points?
Yep, and he gets to choose which of those sexy warlord
And
traits you get
depending
every game.
on where you need him to be and what unit he needs to be in and how you're playing it out, absolutely you should be taking him. I also ended up taking a chaplain with artificer armor on a bike, unsurprisingly, to go with my Black Knights.
Yeah, hey, I literally just said that. Where I'm like,
Oh, I know.
yeah, eat the shit, save
On
those
the same
42 point
page, man.
Marines.
Yeah. And again, the bonuses from the chaplain are very good for that squad, you know? So I mean, it's definitely something to go for. But after that, a 10-man tactical squad with a plasma cannon and I believe I put a Melta gun in there. With a Razorback Last Plas. So the last cannon
Last
and Twin
cannon,
Link
plasma gun.
plasma gun. So that was troop choice number one. Troop choice number two ends up being Ravenwing attack squad. So the full 10-man. So six bikes, two Melta guns, attack bike with multi Melta, and land speeder with a multi Melta. So if I split them up, they can go tank hunting. If I move them together, they can still do a lot of damage in terms of shooting. Lots of wounds, lots of, toughness five. I think they're just a good mobile squad that has a ton of uses. So I don't really see any point in splitting those up. Ravenwing Black Knights, surprise, surprise, 10 of them. I don't think there's any reason not to take 10. And I gave them the three grenade launchers. I didn't do any other upgrades for them. They're just as is right there. Yeah, they've got the chaplain with them, obviously. After that, I kind of skipped over a lot of the fast attack stuff, weirdly enough.
Well, I mean, the only thing in the fast attack slot is attack squads, if you have a HQ choice to make them troops, and black knights. Nothing else is really worthwhile. Land speeders are land speeders. I find they're really good points fills. Assault squads are completely unnecessary in this kind of army. I mean, it's just like, eh,
Yeah, and again, like I looked at the Nephilim jet fighter a little bit, even though they took off the missile lock. Oh my God, because it was a rule that had nothing to do with anything and was nowhere in the book, So whatever. But they took the missile lock off of that. But really, I just kind of found myself falling back down into heavy support, and I've got a 5-man dev team, three flak missile or four flak missile launchers in a Last Plas Razorback. It's good mobility. It's a lot of options for fire, and it's good anti-air defense for when you're dealing with flyers on the table. And again, because missile launchers can do everything, there's really no reason not to have, I think, a squad of five. I think it only ends up being with the Rhino, it's still under like 250 points or something stupid like that. Like it's really, really low. So I don't think there's any reason not to take that. So that ends up, that puts me happily in the about 1550 mark for points. So I mean, depending on the size of the game that I'm playing at that point, I'm either adding dreadnoughts and drop pods or vindicators. And it's or a mix of the two, kind of depending on the size of the game. Those are my absolutely, I should take them. They're always going to be worth their points, but they're not the must that I want to be bringing to the table. I've got more than enough anti-tank, I've got more than enough mobility, I've got more than enough flexibility. When it comes down to combat, I've got one, maybe two very effective combat squads. If I throw Asriel in with the squad of 10 Marines and have them running around with whatever special ability I end up giving them, so I think it's a relatively strong list for shooting. I think the only thing it's really going to be lacking on is range, but again, I would be making that up with, that extra 200-300 points, depending on, I don't know, how much I played it or kind of how much I was seeing on it. But yeah, that's my list.
I find it interesting that you take Azrael, not because he's bad, because he's awesome. Why do you not take Samael? I mean, you have no Deathwing units whatsoever. Why would you not take Samael? Also put him with your Black Knights as another one of those wound soakers, because he is what, Artificer armor with a Iron Halo as well. So it's just like that'd give you two characters that are 2+4+ toughness five. And his automatic warlord trait of rapid maneuver adds even more speed to your Black Knights. Oh no, he's just 3+, but still
Well, he's
good.
just a he's a bit of overkill, and that's the reason why I stray away from him, is I don't want to put everything into one unit. I mean, for 100 and what is it, 120 points, no, 100, but roughly
What,
150, I should
Samael?
say. No, 150 points for the chaplain with the artificer armor on a bike,
Yeah.
right? Like for that, I'm getting what I need in that squad already. I don't need what he's got there. When it comes down to Asriel, it's the flexibility of his warlord trait. It's depending on what I need at the time. That's what I'm going to be throwing out at the start of the game. I'm going to be like, right, he's going with this unit. That means I'm giving him this. Okay, right, he's going with this unit. That's why I'm going to give him this. And I do like the fact that everything on the table now becomes leadership 10. Not that it really matters, but I like that everything on the table now is leadership 10 and stubborn as opposed to leadership 9 and stubborn.
Yeah.
No, also, when it comes down to it, he's got the plus 2 strength power weapon, which I love.
Oh, look. Azrael is a beast. There's absolutely nothing wrong with taking him. I was just curious because I was expecting, when you said you were taking Azrael, I was expecting Deathwing units, of which you have none. And I actually find that to be interesting because, I mean, I have made a ton of lists over the course of this week. I think I made about 10 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they have run the gamut. They have run the gamut of trying to max out on some of the standards that they have to pure Deathwing, to pure Ravenwing, to, you know, basically vanilla with no Ravenwing or Deathwing. Or, you know, I have run everything. And, you know, realistically, in everything that I've kind of looked at, it's just like, yeah, one unit of Deathwing Terminators is good. But no matter, unless I was specifically trying to theme Deathwing, at no point did I ever take a second one.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Like, it's just like, you know, it just never came up. Because when I was just like, well, it's 220 base, but that's like five more, that's five Black Knights. It's just like,
right.
How could I not take it?
I like the idea of Deathwing. And I mean, I put together a couple of Deathwing lists that were, you know, again, a lot of Terminators. It was really just troops. You know, and that was my big thing is if I'm going to take a Terminator list, it's just going to be Terminators. And I'm just going to let Terminators do everything I need them to do. Yeah. And that was pretty much the only thing. But again, it's very dry. You know, there's no surprises in a list like that. It's just Deathwing Terminator Squad after Deathwing Terminator Squad.
Even then, I do find like lists like that to have quite a few holes in them. But no, like I said, it's just, to me, one thing that really did start standing out, because I know when I first read it, I was just like, holy shit, Deathwing Terminators. Like, you know, these guys are so good.
Yeah, they're great.
But every single, like, every list I made, I just, you know, I stopped even considering them. Like, I think by the time I was on, like, making my, you know, 11th or 12th potential list with, you know, slight variations, because let's be honest, Marines are fucking Marines. There's not a lot you're going to be able to do with it, especially in an army like this where you have two options for realistically one option, but I mean, they give you tactical squads, they give you scouts, and with the cost reduction on, I mean, both scouts and tactical Marines have gone down, but it's just like, why would you ever take scouts? They're 2 points cheaper than a tactical Marine. They are weapon skill, ballistic skill 3, and scout armor. Pay the 2 points. A 10-man squad is 20 points to upgrade them to Marines.
If you're dying for snipers, that's the only reason.
You know, and that's exactly it, is if you really want snipers, because if you give them camo cloaks, they're now coming in at exactly a tactical Marine. And yes, camo cloaks can stack for a 2-plus cover save, but sniper rifles never really do the kind of damage that you're looking for.
They never
so it's
have.
Just like, I got a 5-man squad camping an objective. Yes, one heavy flamer is going to kill the entire unit. But you at least have to get close enough to drop that heavy flamer before I'll lose anyone. But, you know, so it's just like, you have tactical Marines. After that, you have to use special characters to unlock either the attack squads or the Deathwing Terminators. But even though they have that really kind of dry, you know, I'm Codex Marines, you know, tactical squads are going to be your workhorses, I really just stopped even, I stopped even thinking about Deathwing Terminators.
Right.
Because of the fact that I find that the mobility, you know, and I don't know whether it's my bias because I have always liked bikes. I mean, my Dark Eldar army had a 10-man squad. Like, it's just like I always have appreciated bikes, the mobility that you get. But like I said, I just find the Ravenwing are the fucking stars in this book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I that's why it's just like I found it harder and harder to justify putting in Deathwing Terminators. But that being said, a full 10-man squad with two plasma cannons with Deathwing Assault and whatever the rule that gives you your twin linked.
When you deep strike them, yeah.
Yeah, when you deep strike them, it's a ridiculous amount of firepower. Absolutely ungodly amount of fire. Vengeful strike, that's the one.
Well, and again, I like taking, you know, having them deep strike. I like taking them in Land Raiders with the upgrade for Deathwing Vehicle. You know, like there's more than enough happening here that makes you look at them and go, oh, yeah, absolutely. They're very, very viable. But all of those lists are very straightforward. There's not a lot of surprises. There's not a lot of maneuvering. It's just chunk down as quickly as you can, get in, you know, chew them up with the shooting that you have, chew them up then with the combat that you have, and hope that you've won the attrition war. You know, like, and that's really what you're going to come or find yourself doing over and over and over again with the Deathwing lists. I don't think there's any real variety. As much as they tried to add variety mm-hmm. with the Deathwing Knights, I think the problem is we just there's not enough variety in Deathwing to make people all over the place go like, oh, I gotta play Deathwing. It's still an all Terminator list.
Well, even beyond that, though, as we said, Deathwing Knights are such a shit option unless you specifically know you're going to be going up against Chaos Space Marines. I mean, if I was playing 100% pure Deathwing and taking it to a tournament, I mean, A, I'm not getting to a top table ever. But B, it's just like, okay, fine. I may choose to put in 5 Deathwing Knights as my fucking plan B should I ever get a Chaos Space Marine draw. And even then, only if it's just like, oh, they would have been Thunderhammer Stormshield Terminators, which are slightly more expensive. Maybe. Like, you know, because it's just Deathwing Knights are just not a good option. I mean, you're paying, what, 44 points per model for an AP4 weapon?
Yep.
Give me a break.
If you're dying to strike at initiative, go for it. And that's really all it comes down to. I mean,
if you're dying to strike at initiative, take your pair of lightning claws.
Well, it's and that's cheaper. Exactly it, right? Like, and I said that last episode. I don't see why you would ever take these guys over a squad of Terminators with lightning claws. If you want the combat, you want the reliability, and you want to be able to strike at initiative, there's no reason not to take lightning claws. I mean, it's just they're better. But yeah, that's where we end up landing. So, any final thoughts on my list before you run us through what you put in?
I think the only thing, like, if you were going to take that list to a tournament, I think the only thing that you were going to possibly run into is you only have 16 scoring models.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sorry, 17. The Landspeeder can never score. And I think that's something you might that might become an issue. Because, again, this is still an addition of objectives scoring you additional victory points. So, yes, you can get First Blood. Yes, you can get Slay the Warlord,
mm-hmm.
you know, easily with a list like that. Are those 2 victory points going to be enough to, you know, in heavy objective-based scenarios that 6th edition does have a few of? So that's why I was, you know, it might be the only option. Maybe, you know, potentially take another squad of Ravenwing attack squads. Because, I mean, mm-hmm. fuck, even if you just took 6 of them.
Right.
It's cheap as borscht for those guys.
And again, one of the nice things about Dark Angels in this book is that you can still take a heavy weapon with a 5-man squad. So basically what I was looking at doing was
I don't think...
Oh, yeah. No, you can. If the squad number is less than 10 models, one Space Marine replaces Bolt Gun with either a special or heavy weapon.
Oh, shit. See, I completely skipped that bullet point, and I was reading the it number's 10, you may replace with a special and...
Oh, yeah. No. What I like about it is it's awesome. Like, well, I'll just take a 5-man, put them in a Rhino, you know, and have them run around with a, you know, open up the top and just shoot the fucking, you know, whatever heavy weapon I put on them. Missile launcher, probably. And just have them shoot it out of the top.
Give them a flamer in a fucking razorback.
Well, and again, yeah, you can do that as well, right? Like there's more than enough options mm-hmm. here where you can look at it and say, oh yeah, well I can still just get, yeah, I can Fair min-max enough. Everything I need with, you know, this little 5-man squad because it's under like 200 points. But yeah, no, I actually see what you're saying there. And I probably would get another 5-man in there, mm-hmm. or maybe that's the only reason for me to take scouts.
Yeah, exactly. Look, 60 points, 5 guys. Go fuck yourself.
There you go. Throw them into cover on an objective with their 2+ save. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. But no, I mean, like, that's good. For me, I think the list that I'm going to push forward is going to be one that's trying to use the toys.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was looking at is the standard of devastation is... I want to say devastating to be punny, but it's awesome. Out of all 3 of the standards that you can take, the sort of sacred standards,
mm-hmm.
it is far and above the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Feel No Pain aura is okay. Not great. And then the, what is it? Furious Charge, I think, is the other one.
Yep.
Again, okay, not great. But then you get to Standard of Devastation, which turns every bolt gun into salvo 2/4 weapons.
Yeah.
For me, there are two ways that you can realistically take this to maximum effect. The first, which is actually a list that I didn't show you. Actually, you know what? I'll go with the typical one. The first is to kind of max out your tactical squads. So take whatever HQ you need. The list I did took Azrael because I also added in a 10-man Deathwing Terminator squad. And I wanted them to score. And then I also had a Ravenwing attack squad for no good reason whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, take whatever you want. I would personally take Azrael so that you can choose the number 6 Warlord trait that's going to give Feel No Pain to his squad.
When he's within 3 inches of
it. When he's within 3 inches of an objective. And then I took, obviously, the command squad, upgraded them to a Standard of Devastation, made sure everyone else had a bolter, because they're now salvo 2/4 weapons. Now, yes, I did rag on salvo with Emperor's Children. However, that was paying points for it. Like, for this, you're paying 65 points, and everyone is going to benefit. So after that, I basically just sort of spammed it out, took 4 tactical squads, all 10 man, 1 missile launcher with flak missiles, with the basic strategy being split them all into combat squads. The 5 regular Bolter Marines are going to stand next to the Standard of Devastation and throw out 20 shots for 5 guys. Your 5 with the rocket launcher are going to pair off into the buddy system, so you'll always have 10 Marines with 2 rockets able to shoot at flyers, rhinos, dumb shit like that, counter charge if necessary. You know, basically, like I said, buddy system it up. So you have 2 10-man squads wherever you need them for line of sight purposes. I then took a 10-man Deathwing Terminator squad with 2 plasma cannons, 2 chain fists, just in case they have dreadnoughts or shit like that. You don't want to get stuck, especially when it's 5 points for a chain fist.
Right.
And you basically just use them with their Deathwing Assault. I think personally you always want to go with turn 2 anytime you're using your Deathwing Assault, because you get to pick either turn 1 or turn 2. I don't think there's ever a good reason to choose turn 1 unless you are taking a small 5-man with a Cyclone Missile Launcher and you just want him to bust open rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, have him come down turn 1 so you can rear armor a rhino, get the disembark the Marines so that your salvo weapons can unleash hell. And then, I mean, after that, I think whatever you want to put your points into. Personally, I think that a few more heavy weapons is going to be good. So Landspeeder Support Squadrons buying Typhoon Missile Launchers is going to be useful. Otherwise, Devastator Squads, but or even Predators. But basically, once you have that solid core of 4 tactical squads and your Deathwings and your command squads and all of that, you have to start filling out the holes in your army. I mean, an army like this is rolling trying to roll a hard 6 on shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't even dick around with close combat. Don't buy veteran sergeants. Don't give them power fists. Just don't waste those points. Pack in as many fucking bodies as you can. Because with your 25 Marines, including the 5 from the command squad, within range of the Standard of Devastation, A, it's 25 Marines. So even if someone wants to assault you to try to deal with that and get rid of it, they're going to have a hell of a time getting through that many bodies.
Mm-hmm.
B, it's 100 fucking Bolter shots if you remain stationary a turn. So what you're really hoping to do is force the issue. Force them to either leave you the fuck alone, in which case you get to claim an objective for free because he doesn't want to walk into a fusillade of 100 Bolter shots. Or pound you from a distance and, you know, and again, just kind of leave himself open. Like, that's really realistically what that list is going to try to do. Your Deathwing Terminators are going to come down turn 2 after your rocket launchers have had a couple shooting phases to disembark some people and let those plasma cannons sink, especially with twin linked. It means you're basically going to fucking get them wherever you need them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of it. I mean,
well, and you can teleport Homer onto Black Knights if you take them.
Yeah, absolutely. Or fucking Ravenwing attack versions of teleport homers and things like that. Because I think I ended up taking Azrael on the list because I also took 2 6-man attack squadrons without any upgrades beyond Meltaguns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because at that point I think they're 170 points, which is cheap for a scoring unit. And, you know, the Melta guns are going to help you against armor 14, which you don't want to waste rockets on. And it's just like, yeah, the teleport homers, the fact that at that point your entire army is scoring, things of that nature. So, I mean,
So in
think
that
it,
list that you put down, no
yes.
Black Knights?
No, not in that list because you're specifically trying to exploit and maximize your banner fortitude.
Which is weird.
Personally, I think that if you were going to do it and you wanted to do it competitive, I would take a unit of Black Knights. I think 2 6-man squads is the ideal configuration for Black Knights. Because you're getting 8 plasma gunshots, you take the 2 grenade launchers, and they can deal with most anything with Hammer of Wrath. Also at 6-man, they're about 260 points, which is not bad at all. Unlike your 10-man squad with Chaplain, which is coming in around 650.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, give or take a few points, but it's just like 2 6-man squads, you're probably going to end up spending about 500 points, you know, 520, 530 on that. And it does give you the flexibility of, you know, redeploying where you need them, you know, getting them wherever. I think that that would be the best way to do it is when you have your 10-man Deathwing squad or Deathwing Terminator squad, and you have your 4 tactical squads, your command squad, whatever HQ you need. If you want your Terminators to be scoring, I would just stick with Belial. He's a little bit cheaper than Azrael. If you don't care about them scoring, just take a dirt cheap company master. Don't even fuck around. Give him a bolter. I always salvo 4, ballistic skill 5. Go nuts. And then just take Black Knights, and Black Knights are realistically going to be, or sorry, take Black Knights and take a few Land Speeders with multi-meltas. You do need an anti armor value 14. You do not have it unless you're taking Melta somewhere, and I think that's why I went with the attack squads over the Black Knights. But I think a unit of 6 Black Knights as your kind of close combat, finish them off at home. You know, play screen. I honestly, in a list like that, if you're maximizing your standard of devastation, I would hold the Black Knights in reserve and use them to intercept anything that is running at your 100 bolter shots and have them kill it because they'll
Okay.
kill everything.
Yeah, and again, like we one of the things that I said to you last week when you showed me the list that you were just talking about right now is I said, well, yeah, it's always going to feel a little weird when you're trying to maximize that one item for, you know, dramatic effect. And I mean, obviously, you're going to run into holes, like you said, with those last big chunk of points. The biggest thing you're doing is trying to fill holes in it. I did have a question for you though. If you're taking a command squad and you're tossing Azrael in it, why aren't you taking an apothecary instead of taking the number 6 warlord trait?
Sure. Well, Azrael was going to go wherever.
Oh, okay.
You can take an apothecary, you can do whatever. Because the other thing is if you're gonna max out on the standard of devastation and they hit you with a Earthshaker cannon or something, your command squad's going to ground. You know, it's just like you know, because A, they're all in cover anyway. If you can buy a tech marine, fucking buy him to bolster the piece of cover that they're gonna hide in. So that way, if you have to, your command squad, your standard goes to ground, pulling a 2+ cover save to keep it alive. With that being said, the other method of maximizing the standard of devastation is, in my opinion, the better method, and that is taking Samael, a Ravenwing command squad, and all Ravenwing attack bikes because they all come with twin-linked bolters, which now become salvo 2/4. Bikes have relentless, which means they're always firing 4 shots a turn, twin-linked. And you have the mobility. You're never see yeah, with your tactical marines, they have to remain stationary because if they move, they get 2 shots at 12 inches. Unlike, you know, your normal bolt guns, which can move and fire 1 shot at 24. So realistically, I think the better list is going to be something that is Samael, Ravenwing Command Squad with Standard of Devastation and Apothecary. And then you take 6 attack squads that are all 6-man bolters. Don't buy them any upgrades. If you want, maybe buy Power Fist on a veteran sergeant. And then you can take 6 attack bikes with multi-meltas. And that is giving, you know, and that's giving you the more well-rounded because A, you're fucking mobile. B, you would have 36 bolter marines, which are going to fire, throw out 144 twin-linked bolter shots a turn, which is devastating amounts of firepower. I mean, I don't care what the fuck you are. Like, I'll kill a hive. I'll kill a Trigon a turn with that many Bolter shots.
Mm-hmm.
And then you still have the ability to take your Black Knights as support elements. Because, I mean, realistically, you could have a full bike army. I would think at 1850, you could easily get Samael the Command Squad, six squads with six attack bikes with multi-melta, and probably 3 6-man Black Knight squads, and maybe even have a few points left to spare. And that, to me, I'm just like, I look at it, and I'm just like, what are you going to do? You're facing down about 60 bikes. You have anti-tank. You have anti-fucking... anti-light infantry and even heavy infantry with that many Bolter shots. Your Black Knights are anti-everything other than flyers.
Right.
And I think, you know, flyers would be the only thing you'd have to worry about. And just in case, I think that would be a list that would benefit from taking a fortification with the just your basic Aegis defense line with your quad gun and take a 5-man tactical squad to man it. Or hell, a 5-man scout squad because it's cheaper and you just have the sergeant firing the gun because he's ballistic skill 4 instead of 3. Like, you know, and that's exactly it, because realistically the only weakness of that all Ravenwing Standard of Devastation army is air. You have no way of realistically dealing with an aircraft that is armor value 11, because let's be honest, 144 Bolter shots are going to devastate a Doomscythe. I'll kill it every mm-hmm. turn. Because I'm twin-linked, so hitting on sixes doesn't mean shit to me.
Right. All right, so for you, I mean, it seems like more than normal, I guess. You're getting a little lost in this book. You know, like, I think there's too many things pulling you in too many directions, because it doesn't seem like you've got, like, a favorite configuration or a favorite list that you feel like you want to be doing with Dark Angels.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, I think that with this book, again, what I was trying to do with almost all of my lists is stick to the basics that make Marines win. And those are, for the most part, pack as many bodies as you can and shoot the shit out of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every Marine army, I don't give a shit if you're Chaos Marines or if you're Blood Angels or you're Grey Knights, you are fucking terrible in close combat. Okay, you're going to run into a Xenos player that does it better than you.
Usually.
Unless you're
Black Knights.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, Black Knights are not winning because of the fact that they have those four attacks on the charge at strength 5 rending. They're winning because your 10-man squad is down to one guy and their hammer wrath attacks killed it.
Exactly.
It's their shooting phase that's giving them
It's the mix of the both.
If you're getting
flanked by a unit of Terminators and you're not getting a charge off or something like that, like, yeah, they're gonna crumble, right? Like, they're gonna fall off. But again, it's about being smart with that unit in terms of where you're putting it and not just going balls out, Khorne Berserker style into your opponent, you know, so that his entire fucking Tyranid army folds in on you and the whole rest of your army's slowly trudging their way up the table shooting bolters.
Exactly. But anyway, because, like, that's the thing is, like, if you look at it, every single list that I have ever sent you
mm-hmm.
does not really use any of the crazy bullshit. The only exception are standards.
Yeah.
You know, I don't take Night Shrouds. I don't take any of their fighters. I don't take that stupid 160-point land speeder.
Well, so, what I found interesting about the book and the list that you and I had put together and, you know, all the different things that we'd kind of been working on was that we really, really kind of avoided any special items, special war gear, chapter relics. I mean, outside of the Standard of Devastation, because it's so devastating, we actually avoided all of the little tricks and tools and, you know, icing on the cake type stuff and stuck to just what was flat out good, being, you know, the Black Knights, the attack squads, you know, the odd squad of Deathwing Terminators, and the fact that your core Marines are dirt cheap and have a mm-hmm. lot of flexibility, and you're just using the things that make Marine good. You're using Razorbacks, using combat squads, you're using all those different types of things. I mean, I even found myself looking at the book going, like, should I take an Interrogator Chaplain or a Chaplain?
Yeah.
I'll save 20 points and take a Chaplain, thanks. You know what I mean? Like, they even gave you the option to be like, nah, fuck that. Fuck Interrogator Chaplains. I'm just going to have a chaplain. Yep. You know what I mean? And I think that's very funny. Because, like, why, if you're going to play specifically a Dark Angel's book, why is every chaplain not an interrogator chaplain? Right? Like, and so I kind of look at that and I go, fuck, whatever. You know, like, it's just, it's a very weird, funny quirk about the book is that it really even seems like Games Workshop while writing it is like, oh, no, every Marine player should be playing this book. We're just going to give you everything you need so that even the list you're currently playing, you can fit into this book without really worrying too much about it unless you've got this specific dreadnought or you're using this, I guess it's just the dreadnought.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I find interesting about it is this codex, in terms of Space Marines, is basically the old vanilla Marine codex.
Yeah.
So not the current one that Matt Ward wrote, but the one before that that had the trait system. Because, realistically, you don't have any of the new vanilla Marine shit. You don't have Stern Guard vets. You don't have Vanguard vets. You just have veterans as they used to exist and how they kind of exist in the in the Chaos Space Marine Codex is chosen. You know, you basically have an identical, selection there. You don't have Ironclad Dreadnoughts. You don't have Thunderfire Cannons. So basically every single thing that Matt Ward added to the Space Marine Army, this book has removed.
Ooh, interesting.
And in its place, you get the terrible Deathwing Knights, and you get the amazing Ravenwing, or, Ravenwing Black Knights.
Hold on. I would not say that Deathwing Knights are terrible. Again, they're Terminators. Yes, they have a weird weapon, but they have an option for flexibility.
See, like I said, okay, you know what? You're right.
They're not
terrible. I could potentially see taking, like, if you absolutely wanted to have a Land Raider with Terminators running out of it, take a Crusader, have Deathwings run out of them. Because at the very least, if you have to run at your opponent's Land Raider, you can at least trigger your I'm Strength 10 AP 1. And just absolutely rape the shit out of it.
They also bafflingly have Hammer of Wrath and also bafflingly are Toughness 5 when they come out of that Land Raider because you're going to put them all in base-to-base contact. Like, again, I think they've got enough little quirky things where you're like, I'm not going to call you an idiot for taking them, but you probably are better served going this way.
Fair enough.
Because I know Maddie loved them. He's like, I want to take a squad of 10.
Well, that's because Maddie does dumb things. And in 3 years, he's going to come around to cloaking is not bad and pretty good. And he's going to come around to, why didn't I just take Lightning Claw Terminators?
Well, he was very, very happy that he was very happy that actually he could give a chaplain dual Lightning Claws and a jump pack.
Oh, fuck.
Uh-huh. He was very happy about that. So
now he can use Chaplain Anubis.
Master Chaplain Anubis.
Interrogator Chaplain Anubis in this book.
Fuck off. You don't have to because, again, they give you chaplains. So whatever.
It's true. But Maddie, he can't turn down an upgrade.
Let's wrap this shit up.
Basically, with this book, you're going to win like a Marine army. All of your old 4th edition lists are fucking awesome in this book because your points costs have come down. You are a 5th edition compliant army. Your points costed to 5th edition where everything is cheaper. You can get more bodies. And like I said, all of the Matt Ward-isms of the vanilla Space Marine Codex are gone. Out of
5th edition or 6th edition?
6th of this shit.
I was like, what are you talking about, man? You're throwing me off of my game.
He
meant 6th edition,
listener. I meant 6th edition, listener. All two of you. And that's exactly it. So your keys to victory in any Dark Angels army is decide how you want your Marine list to play and just build it without falling into any of the fucking traps. It has less shit in it than the Blood Angels and the Space Wolves book. Both of them combined. You really can't go wrong with any choices in here other than the Landspeeder Vengeance, because if you're going to pay 160 points for a 2 hull point armor 10 vehicle, first of all, thank you.
Just so you can fire a few more plasmas.
Yeah, and that's exactly it is because obviously you do not have access to enough plasma weapons in your Dark Angels Codex.
Right.
Your Black Knights certainly don't have enough plasma to get the job done. So let's just throw points in the garbage. And that's really it is I don't even find their fighters that awesome. Like we had mentioned, take the last cannon off, never shoot it at a at another flyer or at a tank. Just kind of deal with anti-infantry.
Take the mega bolter.
Yeah, you know, and don't take the other one with the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
It's crap.
Because the rift cannon is garbage.
The rift cannon is terrible. You know, and that's exactly it. So, I mean, do you want to play with a lot of mobility? Take bikes. Do you love your Terminators? Take Deathwing. You know, and I think that's really where this book is. And like you said, I wasn't super focused. Because unlike, you know, Vanilla Marines, where I'm just like, no, I take six tactical squads as a starting point because they're fucking great. And then I take Devastators because they're just tactical squads with more heavy weapons.
Mm-hmm.
That's my list. That's every fucking Marine list I ever come up with. Because when I deployed 1850 and I got 90 Space Marines on the table, come at me, bro. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit who you are. You're not going to, you know, it's just like, I got too many heavy weapons. I'm going to get the job done. Dark Angels can do that. Your Marines are cheaper. Dark Angels also have some neat abilities on staple units. Deathwing Terminators are basically just Terminators. They're a couple points more expensive per guy, which when you're already talking about dropping 400 for a 10-man squad, what the fuck is 40?
It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it's nothing.
You'd pay that for the upgrades you get.
Basically, the discount you got on your tactical Marines is paying for the increased cost of your Terminators. And guess what? Your Terminators are fucking better.
Well, you're buying special abilities. That's what it comes down to for me. I'm not even looking at it as a balancing issue. It's just, listen, you're buying... Yeah, and that's special abilities that make them a lot better and a lot more useful. You're
reliability in that you choose the turn that they come on, turn one or two. You don't even have to fucking roll. You just get them. You are buying that Vengeful Strike, which is basically Lysander's Bolter Drill, for free the turn you come on, which you are going to come on because it's a free, you know, it's an awesome, reliable ability. And you even get split fire. So even if you wanted to just take one assault cannon, which actually I think the assault cannon is the only loser option. I think it's too many points in that unit. But it's just like you take your one, your one cyclone missile launcher, and he's the one that split fires every turn. So it's just like my plasma cannon and my eight storm bolters are all going to shoot at this infantry squad and fucking wreck it. Meanwhile, I'm going to punch rear armor on that rhino with this dude. And that's what you're doing, is you are buying those special abilities.
And you're fearless, and you've got preferred enemy Chaos Space Marines.
Oh, shit, I forgot they had Inner Circle.
Inner Circle. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, all in all, it seems like you have a very positive outlook on this book. I have a very positive outlook on this book as well. I think that it was a good change. However, when you and I talked last week about this, you know, I kind of expressed some discontent with the book because of the fact that it felt so rehashed and so normal and so straightforward, and it was very much playing it safe. You know, it's like, for instance, it's like when a book gets turned into a movie, right? World War Z is a good example. It's being turned into a movie very soon with Brad Pitt. The book is amazing. It's an awesome story. It's phenomenal. The audiobook has Mark Hamill in it as the main character. I mean, it's fucking amazing. It's by Max Brooks. So outside of the name, the movie has nothing to do with the book. And the reason why is because you can't sell it. They look at it and they say, well, it's unfilmable. They look at it and they say, well, no, we need to make it more mainstream. We don't want to do zombies. We want to do rage infect. We don't want to do this. We want to do this. We don't want to tell a bunch of little stories in flashback form. We want to tell a big story about a man and his family and, you know, getting his kids to safety and bullshit, blah, blah, blah. Because that formula makes money. So why ever deviate from the formula? And that's what I felt about this book. Because even when I looked at this book and I looked at the Chaos Marine book, in my eyes, they feel so similar. In the sense that they're going to give you the options to do this crazy awesome stuff, but they're going to play it safe and they're going to give you everything to continue playing it safe. The core of this book and what makes it good and how you can make it good is really no different from the Chaos book.
Yeah.
And to me, that's frustrating because I look at it and I go like, right, well, I could play a Space Marine army using the Chaos Space Marine book and be perfectly happy with those rules because there's some very, very awesome rules and some very, very awesome abilities that I can throw in there. Or I can play Vanilla Marines using the Dark Angels book because, again, for the exact same reasons but with a slight alteration to what's good and what's not good, I can go that way instead. right? Yeah. Like, if I were going to play an all-Marine list, I wouldn't be using the Dark Angels book. I'd be using the Chaos Marine book.
You know, that's interesting. You actually beat me to my question to you, which was, which book do you think does the better job? I mean, this is the second codex of 6th edition. I mean, it's basically the same army. Fuck, I hate Marines. I'm so bored to death.
Off the cuff... off the cuff, I would say it's narrowly Chaos Space Marines.
See, for me, I think narrowly. That Chaos Space Marines are the army that has more flavor. I think that the Chaos Space Marine book more accurately reflects Chaos Space Marines.
Right.
You know, I think the Dark Angels book is more competitive simply because there's less trash. It's a lot easier to make a focused competitive army list out of the Dark Angels book because they're basically saying, take Black Knights, take your cheaper tactical squads, and it really doesn't matter what else you do unless and it's just like, whereas the Chaos Space Marine squad is bogged down with options, and a lot of those options are bad. I mean, the Hell Drake is an overpriced piece of shit.
And again, I'm not...
You know, like, it's just like, you look at it and it's just like, in terms of flyers... It's what? One of the most expensive flyers.
Let me validate my choice here.
Okay.
Before we get into Chaos Space Marines and how shitty the fucking Helldrake is, because we're running over time here.
Yeah.
It's because of the marks on the Marines, and that's the reason why. That's the reason why I lean in that direction, because you look at the marks that you can get for these Marines, and you look at the things that you can do with, you know, Hell Brutes and all that kind of stuff. The upgrades for the vehicles are not quite as good, but comparable. You know, you've got a similar nice warlord trait table. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to each book does something good with Marines. You're either paying more points or less points, but either way, it does something good with Marines. I think the Chaos one is better for the points. Both books have an awesome unit that you're crazy not to take, whether it's Spawns or Black Knights. Yeah. In this case, Black Knights are the better choice. They're fucking amazing, but Spawns are still fucking amazing. But when it comes down to Marines, like just Marine. Cheap Terminators as opposed to better, more expensive Terminators, I'm going to lean toward cheap Terminators.
Yeah.
And I think that's the breaking point for me. I think they both do Marines well from the tax squad point of view. They both have a super awesome, cool unit that's pretty great. But when I look at the Terminators as being, I want to put Terminators in my list, I am more apt to put Terminators into my list in a Chaos list and get more out of them for the cheaper points cost as opposed to trying to play through the Dark Angels book and say, right, I'm going to take more expensive Terminators or I'm going to take really expensive bikes or things of that nature. I would build a list more similar to a list that you would build using the Chaos book.
Yeah, and you know what? What's interesting about that is you're absolutely right, is every single Deathwing Terminator squad I ever took was 480 points because I took 10 man, 2 plasma cannons, 2 chain fists. Mm-hmm. And again, the chain fists are 10 points. So even if you got rid of them, you're paying 470. Mm-hmm. But I like just in cases, especially at 5 points, right? Exactly. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Why not?
As a comparison, I mean, you can take 10 Chaos Terminators, take a pair of Heavy Flamers, take like 6 Combi Meltas, 2 Chain Fists, and give them a mark of Nurgle for Toughness 5, so they're like Deathwing Knights. And you're paying 400 points, maybe less. Exactly. And I think that's always the big thing where you're just like, but, you know, and with that 100 extra points, like, that's 3 Chaos Spawn. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, or you know, that's a Mauler Fiend, or you know, all of these other things where you look at it and you get it. For me, I think the Chaos Space Marine book wins out as the better book.
Simply slim.
It is slim. Like I said, I do truly feel that you will see more competitive Dark Angels lists than you will see competitive Chaos Marine lists, because Chaos Marines kind of fall into that same trap that Blood Angels do, and I would say Necrons to a lesser extent, in that there's enough extraneous bullshit to distract you from the real power units and the power combinations that the majority of players that you encounter are not going to be fucking pure optimized hardness. The Dark Angels books, because it has less filler units, less fluff units, less characterful units, it's easier to get to that sort of concentrated goodness. And I think that's why I say that it is a more, you know, a more powerful codex. I personally am a huge fan of options. The one thing that became apparent to me, the more lists that I kept making in that Dark Angels book, is that they all started to look the same. And it didn't matter what I did. The only time that they would not look the same, where they'd have three or four tactical squads, was when I was just like, right, I'm going to do a pure Deathwing list. And I don't even think I finished that list. I think I had like four Terminator squads, had like 300 points left. And I was like,
Exactly.
this army can't win.
Well,
It's terrible. It's
you get
flawed.
into the monotony of Terminators,
Yeah.
right? And again, letting your army be them and do everything through them. All right, so I'm going to break us off here, and I'm going to go to a bit of viewer. I'm sorry, viewer.
Viewers.
Listener email and one of our, ooh, it's shiny moments here. I'll send you a link real quick. One of our listeners, Bafo, sent us this. He's from Slovenia. He has a modeling blog called museonminis.com. He had commented about our review of the Scrotal Colossus for War Machine, and he had also talked about, talking about generally us not liking the look and feel of Privateer Press games and stuff like that. He's also done a lot of other conversions where he's done squat gangs for Necromunda, using
That's cool.
Vansar. He's done squats for Apocalypse using Chaos Space Marines, 6,000 some points. You can look all through his blog. It's actually very interesting, but he had said that he enjoys listening to the podcast and our angry rants on models, games, and assorted manufacturers' dick move, which I thought was actually quite apt. But yeah, I mean, absolutely. He's got some podcasts there on his site as well. I would recommend that people take a look. So that's museonminis.com. We did have some other emails here. I'm not going to read his whole email here because we're getting long, but I wanted to pump his post there a little bit. We had one regarding the ETC, which we're going to get to, Brian. So don't
Oh, yeah, I was
we've
gonna say
got two we've got various Brians.
we can't say no to the ETC. It's
But we're waiting. We're waiting.
enormous. We are waiting for them to
Yes.
finalize, because even if you look at version one compared to the final version of last year's ETC rules, there are significant differences where they realize, they're like, fuck, we screwed the dog on this. Like, we need to fix
Well, and
things.
again, like this is one of the guys who's like captain for UK or something like that, who listens to the show, and he was just like, "But my your hatred of ETC baffles me." And okay, I'm just gonna read it now that I've actually started paraphrasing it. So fuck that. Okay,
All right.
this is from Brian Carmichael. He says, "Hi there. Firstly, great show. One of the few podcasts that I listen to, and a refreshing change. Appreciate the off-the-cuff approach and different perspective on the hobby. Thank you very much." I'm fascinated by your hatred of the ETC. I know that some of the changes are slash appear plain dumb, and certainly they are not all to my taste, but it's the best compromise between 30 plus countries, different ways of playing Warhammer, ranging from us Brits pretty much out of the book to the German ultra hard comp with lots of rules changes. The main thing that the event itself is so awesome, meeting, gaming, socializing with the top players from around the world, that you soon see past the comp slash rules changes. Oh, and for completeness of disclosure, I am England's Warhammer Fantasy Battles captain this year. Anyway, wanted to offer some insight. If you guys want, I'm happy to discuss over via Skype. Anyway, keep up the good work. We may take you up on that, but for now,
Yeah, I was
obviously,
going to say,
it's
honestly, I think
late,
I.
late night on a Sunday and I'm drinking.
Yeah, it's not now.
So, I mean, we're not shooting the tournament down, right? I mean, we have our views on Warhammer as a team sport. We've talked about that before. We've talked about, even when we talk about the ETC, one of the things we're very quick to say is, more power to you. These are guys who are involved in the community, who are trying to do what they think is the best for the game, whether we believe in it or not, and as much as we'll fucking tear it to pieces, because we are rules is written out of the book type gamers, we look at these things and they just don't make sense to us. And that's the core of this. The core of this is, having worked for the company, having been playing for as long as we've been playing, active tournament gamers for as long as we've been gaming, I've seen, and I know Nathan will probably agree with me here, more than my fair share of people running tournaments thinking they're going to make it better by adding some bullshit. And it never really adds anything to the game. It never really makes the game better when you just say, well, I'm going to change this rule and I'm going to change this comp. I'm going to change this so you can't play these things because I feel it's a dick move, right? Whereas we look at it from the perspective of the testers, quote unquote, and I mean, they might be as legitimately real as the editors, but
You mean really? Not at all, right?
Exactly, right? But I mean, the testers and the guys who are writing the books, I mean, this is their job. This is what they do. They do it quite regularly. I mean, we know enough people in the company to say that they do playtest, and they playtest a lot, and they try to get it as balanced as possible to what they're doing. They're not typically rushing through rules just saying, oh my God, it's so awesome. Mm-hmm. And you can see that because then you have shit like the Dark Shroud where it's like, oh yeah, they playtested it. It's more than fair. But they overpriced it for the fact that they're just like, well, we don't know exactly where it needs to land yet, so we're just going to give it a slightly higher price tag mm-hmm. so that, you know, nobody can sit there and complain that it's not balanced. And that's the core of our, I guess, hatred toward the ETC's rules packs. Not necessarily their tournament, because, yeah, I think it would be great to game with people from all over the world and, you know, even in a team setting. I'm sure it's a lot of fun. But you know, that's where that comes from. It's not necessarily yeah. from a point of hatred. More power to them, more power to you for
being. Well, and I mean, the other thing is just like, I try to travel a lot for tournaments. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I see it. I, you know, every region has their own metagame. These lists win, these lists don't. This is the way we play here. And so I can appreciate the sentiment of saying, we want to come up with a set of universal guidelines that everyone can play, which is not going to give any one person a significant advantage unless you play Orcs and Goblins, in which case, advantage away.
Advantage away.
You know, we're not going to give any one person a significant advantage, you know, because we're going to try to create a level playing field so that no one region metagame can dominate. And I respect the sentiment. But I think where we differ intrinsically is for us that one set of universal rules that everyone can play and no one has a distinct advantage is called the rule book.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is inherently our problem with the ETC is you feel that the rule book is not it. The rule book is not.
The rules are broken.
Yeah.
Everything breaks the game.
And that's what it comes down to for us is we're just like, but why? Why in God's name would you fucking try to reinvent this rule set? Like, why would you say, hey, everybody, this rule book, which has been playtested by, you know, dozens of people over a period of years, is shit. I know better because I play every Sunday. I mean, the fucking arrogance of it is really what kind of rubs me the wrong way. And I have never gone to a tournament. And again, I've been all over. I've been to different regions. I've seen different metagames. I have never gone to a tournament where I feel that I'm at a significant disadvantage because of the way that I play, you know, that I build lists and play the game. Ever. And that is in both fantasy and 40K. And I would argue that 40K metagame is far more, like, it exists far more than fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Fantasy is always the balanced game by virtue of the fact that everyone doesn't play the same army. 40K requires some additional help in balancing because if I build a purely anti-marine list and no marine army can ever beat me, then I'm winning 80% of all games that I play.
When was the last time you talked about Eldar? Right? Like that, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, we'll talk about different armies for fantasy and we'll go into it, but yeah. I mean it's I agree with you there when it comes to
heard of an Eldar army.
Thank you very much for your email, Brian. That was Brian Carmichael. We appreciate you emailing in here. We've got some other things that we'll try to cut into the next episode. So usually if you send us email, we try to get to them. We try to get them in there. Sometimes they sit for too long and it's not topical anymore, or we've already kind of talked about it, kind of touched on it. Or we run long in episodes like we did here today. So, you know, we will definitely try to get to your emails when you send them and don't feel like we're just ignoring them. If we don't read them on the show, it's not because we don't like you. It's just, you know, you're in the friend zone. So, yeah, back to the Dark Angels.
I'm just not in love with
exactly,
you.
Exactly, right? Back to the Dark Angels here. I did want to touch on this kind of one last thing here. Clip the fucking wings off. Can we just say that? I mean, really, it's the more I had to read through this. And again, it's not like I was forcing myself to read through it, but I spent a lot of time in this codex the same way as I spent a lot of time in the Chaos Space Marine codex. And just the fucking wings, man. Like, I can't do it. Like, the fucking robes and the hoodies and the aprons. Like, it just looks so fucking ridiculous. And so, as much as I looked at, putting together a list and actually maybe building what I currently have with my Space Marines into this book and saying, okay, I'm going to use Dark Angel's rules to play the Space Marine army that I want to play, because I've always liked Space Marine bikes, I always wanted to build like all armies. And I revisit that again. Oh, I just get so fucking sick of the goddamn wings. I can't help that fucking fetish is just driving me crazy at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. For me, I think the only thing that I would add in that I never had a chance to talk about was with the points increase on Razorbacks, it affects the base points increase. All of the weapons options variants come out the same as they do in Vanilla Marines. I would say if you're going to take Razorbacks, make sure you're always upgrading from the Heavy Bolter. Because Vanilla Marines get 40 points for Heavy Bolter, you're paying 55. If you buy an Assault Cannon or a Lasplaz, you're paying the same points across both books because you're paying 15 more base. All of your upgrades are 15 points cheaper. Just make sure you always buy something
Buy the
else.
upgrade.
Buy an upgrade, period. Because, like I said, it's just they increase the points, which I'm okay with because I think 40 points for a pillbox with a heavy bolter is way too few points. It's one of the best bargains in the Marine book. So I'm okay with them going up in points. But like I said, just go for it. If you're going to take a Razorback, upgrade the weapon. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I can't really speak ill of the book. It's
No, it's a good
okay.
book.
Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I was happy with it. It was a good book. But that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.